Victoria, British Columbia, presents a study in contrasts, a tourist-friendly colonial facade masking areas of urban struggle where marginalized communities face daily challenges. 16-year-old Sarah Shaw navigates these disparate environments with careful precision. At school, she maintains a carefully controlled persona, excelling academically while remaining emotionally distant, earning her the nickname Ice Queen. At home, she assumes adult responsibilities in the wake of her mother's departure years ago. She finds herself drawn to a group of rebellious students, attempting to both participate in and moderate their behavior. This delicate balance is disrupted when Sarah becomes aware of a serious incident involving her classmate Heather Hale and members of this same group. When Sarah attempts to offer support in a school bathroom, Heather's resigned response, suggesting she had no real choice in the matter, becomes a pivotal moment that begins to unravel Sarah's carefully structured worldview. The narrative explores critical questions about institutional failures in protecting young women and the complex challenges adolescent girls face in modern society. These themes weave throughout Sarah's journey as she confronts uncomfortable truths about her community and herself, leading to a period of intense personal crisis and transformation. The story examines how young people navigate social pressures, personal responsibility, and the search for authentic identity in a world that often sends contradictory messages about growing up. The match that ignites Sarah's fever appears in Ming's grocery store, a wild girl named Justine with badly dyed black hair and the titular torn skirt that becomes transparent in the rain. When Justine casually steals money from a customer to buy cigarettes, then disappears into Victoria's forbidden red zone, Sarah feels a burning fever that she tries to suppress by thinking of Alaska and shade. This fever becomes both literal and metaphorical, a physical manifestation of Sarah's awakening desires for authentic connection beyond her controlled existence. Her shame about failing to help Heather fuels this fever, driving her search for redemption through girls like Justine, who seem to navigate the world on their own terms. The fever intensifies when Sarah meets Bron Stewart, a predatory modeling scout who pressures her to take test shots. When Sarah suggests he scout a Heather-like girl instead, Bron dismisses her, saying, "Unlike you, she's lost the necessary innocence." A haunting refrain highlighting how society values young women primarily for their perceived purity, while simultaneously working to corrupt it. When Sarah's father leaves for Eden to build a forest house, her last stability anchor vanishes. Their emotional parting reveals his inability to face her resemblance to her mother. "Tears flowed as I clung to him, realizing he couldn't bear to see me becoming like my mother." Rather than helping Sarah navigate this similarity, he flees from it. Alone in their silent home, Sarah considers throwing a party like the Mount Drug Kids, but instead finds herself smashing my head between my knees, a visceral expression of her isolation. Without adult boundaries or support, she gravitates toward equally adrift peers, accelerating her descent into dangerous situations. Though physically absent, Sarah's mother's shadow looms large in her consciousness. Sarah fears becoming like her nympho heartbreaker traitor mother, a fear seemingly confirmed by her father's departure. This creates a painful paradox. Sarah is simultaneously drawn to and terrified by the parts of herself that might echo her mother's rebellious nature. Sarah's street education begins with China, a teenage sex worker who becomes her temporary mentor. After one night, Sarah adopts China's style, a white flimsy dress with ruffles and brown leather witch boots with 3-inch heels. China transforms Sarah's appearance, backcombing her hair into a wild red mane and applying cherry-scented lip gloss, external changes mirroring Sarah's internal transformation. Their hustle involves Sarah distracting the $6 million man with a kiss while China robs him. Their escape is triumphant, but his threat, "You little red-haired bitch, I'll find you," foreshadows trouble. On Victoria's rooftops, China celebrates stealing $300 and credit cards from Dirk Wallace. Her callousness about burning his daughter's photo disturbs Sarah, revealing that, despite wanting to belong, Sarah hasn't fully embraced street values. When China leaves for Penticton with a ticket purchased using Dirk's money, repeatedly showing Sarah her ticket to the school for maps, she abandons Sarah in a world she barely understands. Sarah's collapse leads to placement at White Oaks Youth Facility, where control manifests through psychological assessments, which she sabotages, life skills classes, and the threat of foster care. Her roommate, Amber, initially appears conventional, but is actually the B&E queen, breaking into places not to steal, but to experience forbidden spaces. Cassie arrives from the reservation, labeled uncontrollable for throwing a whiskey bottle, embodying rebellion with her vicious sneer and shaved head, except for black bangs. In the Red Room, a padded chamber with infrared lights meant to calm anger, Amber and Cassie reveal their self-inflicted scars. Cassie has carved words into her skin: slut, bad, and FTW, fuck the world. Their ritual of cutting themselves with razor blades, which they claim feels better than sex, shows how they've internalized society's violence, redirecting it toward their own bodies as a form of control. When they attempt to carve FTW into Sarah's shoulder, her inability to understand their trance-like pleasure in self-mutilation marks a boundary she won't cross, echoing her earlier failure to intervene with Heather. The Blue House Party marks Sarah's deepest descent into Victoria's underworld, a chaotic environment of drugs, violence, and exploitation. Wandering drunkenly, she observes the debauchery while contemplating her own self-destruction, mentally drafting a desperate plea for help to an elegant woman before realizing this potential mentor is injecting drugs. The party exposes Sarah to actual criminals: a woman with a pink mohawk bragging about swinging a baseball bat at a bingo hall, a frail girl begging for Percodan, and a man who showed me his gun. Despite suicidal thoughts, Sarah dances with strangers, fabricates a Smith College background, and avoids the gun-carrying man insisting she get her treat. The climax occurs when Sarah, escaping to the third floor, discovers Justine, alive, her hair now streaked with red and gold, straddling a man. Their eyes meet in recognition between spies who know the truth behind each other's disguises, suggesting Justine sees Sarah's vulnerability, just as Sarah recognizes something authentic in Justine. The novel concludes with Sarah awaiting trial for a violent crime. Police files contain damaging statements. Tiffany claims Sarah plotted murder, Dave invents stories about a sex family, and most harmfully, Mackie portrays himself as an innocent victim. Only Dean Black defends her, though his "cops suck" postscript undermines his credibility. In her cell, Sarah copies phrases from Justine's stories and borrows words from the discovery files. Her isolation ends when Amber deliberately gets arrested to see her, a rare display of genuine loyalty. Sarah ultimately escapes before her hearing when Amber creates a distraction, allowing Sarah to jump onto garbage bags below. The final image shows Sarah hitchhiking in rain, wondering if passing girls might think she's found a way out. For girls like Sarah with limited options, conform or be punished, perhaps true freedom means rejecting the entire system. The torn skirt becomes a perfect symbol, damaged yet functional, revealing what society would hide, a badge of defiance worn openly in the rain.